This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Warning, warning, this is an official warning. The health service recommends you turn off your radio now. This program is not good for you. It will fry your brain. It will cause lasting insanity.
Oh God!
You have been warned.
Like razor blades in my eyes.
We warned you.
Ugh.
Oh God.
My eyes.
Oh,
my ears. We warned you. We warned you. Oh God, it's too late.
Meow. Meow.
Oh God, someone poke my eardrums out now. I can't handle it any longer.
Welcome.
This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and this is a very, very special podcast. It's taken from the Home Cooked Comics Festival 2016, held here at the Northcote Town Hall in Melbourne, and it's one of the special artist talks, held Saturday, April the 30th, from 4:30pm to 5:45pm, and it's called Humour and Humanity. And this panel is with activist cartoonists reflecting on LGBTIQ civil rights milestones of the last 30 years. It includes Kenton Penley Miller, Joe Waite, and myself, Sonia Hammer. Sam Warman's work was also included in the discussion. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it to the actual panel as such, but at least we had some of his fabulous work. So I'd like to thank Kenton and Joe for being part of this fantastic panel and opportunity. And to thanks, of course, to the Home Cooked crowd for Home Cooked Comics Festival 2016 at the Northcote Town Hall. So enjoy this podcast. I hope that it's not just entertaining, but also informative. And of course, gives us time to think of ourselves and reflect for our community's sake. Also, I want to add that some of the content is very adult and of course isn't suitable for listeners under the age of 18. So take a listen to Humour and Humanity, activist cartoonists and the last 30 years of LGBTIQ civil rights milestones.
This group of snotty little private schoolboys came past and said, "Do you wear these to keep the shit off your dick?" And I thought, "Oh, that's a sensible idea." Relationship man, I'm thinking of revisiting and calling it intersectionality person. That would just work.
Yeah. Any time I did anything for a political organisation, they'd say, do a fist smashing through something. Do a fist smashing through the housing crisis. Do a fist smashing through patriarchy. Do a fist smashing through... So there you go, here's a fist.
What
a fist, there's your fist. That never made it onto a T-shirt.
It should be on a T-shirt. Sexuality, it's something you can't contain, you know. You can't stick it in a box, I think. It's reasonable algorithms.
Hi everybody, this is Sonia, Joe Waite and Kenton Henry Miller. Before we start, for comics activism,
and what it means for queer creators of comics and cartoons, especially the last 30, 35 years or so, and where we're going to in the future. So we'll be talking about that. So in welcoming you, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on what we meet here today, the Wurundjeri people from the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. So I guess the idea of the panel today is to include into cartoons and comics, particularly Australian comics and cartoons, the LGBTIQ presence and obviously the artists, of which I'm not. So I'm here to press
these
buttons.
Tell us what you do, Sonia. What do you do? No, you do more than that. What do you do?
As
don't you have like a radio show or something?
Yep, you can word it.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I do this. Oh. I do that. I can see that. Yeah. Oh, that did work. Good. Excellent. So I do a radio show on Joy 94.9 called Sci-Fi and Squeam. I've been doing it for a while now and sort of fell upon doing comics, actually, including comics and cartoons in the genre, simply because there were so many in Melbourne. Melbourne just seems to be thriving with some great artists and comics creators. And also I do panels, and this would be the smallest, most intimate panel I've done, which is great. It's great, there's lots of people. And the tea urn. You never get a tea urn normally. I do that for Queer Geeks of Oz. So that was sort of to include comics, video games, film, fiction genre, looking at queer LGBTIQ representation in those formats. So here we are today. This is where it leads to. And to my left, we've got Jo.
Yeah,
Jo, wait, this is your origin story.
I just thought I'd give you a sort of rundown about how I got to be here. So let's have the first one.
Yeah.
Is that the right one?
Well, no, it's kind of changed.
Okay, you changed it. Well, this is like this is the 70s. This is what I sort of, the contradictory things I grew up reading, like the that's my folder, the one that says bisexuality, the newest sex style. I cut that out of a Dolly or a Cleo or something. Yes. Even normal man loving women. But I've sort of scribbled over the top of it, instead of sex style, the real love. It's very sweet. I was probably about 14. But the main thing was the Young, Gay and Proud, which was put out in about 1978 by gay teachers of Victoria. And it just had stats in it from the Kinsey report. And it just said, yep, not statistically very high, but normal in the population, gay, bisexual people. And so I went, okay. And so anybody who used arguments from religion or from psychology, I just sort of went, you're ill-informed. I must be very literal-minded, fairly stupid person, because I just sort of went, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. All of that propaganda, Catholic propaganda, over the top of my head. What else? What's next? Oh, yeah, that's me. That was me as a little hippie teen. And that's pretty much the sort of things I drew all the time, with a really, really fine rotring, trees, and a little man.
I mean, I can see that on a Led Zeppelin cover. I really can.
That's pretty much what they played in the drama room all day long, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, while they're out the back doing something.
Yeah, I went to a hippie school out in... Well, it was the country when I was there. It isn't anymore. It was Donvale. It's not a school anymore. It's the sort of primary school for posh boys. So, and they put all this safety equipment everywhere. It's much more dangerous. Oh, as in so that you don't bash into the rope swing or fall in the creek. Or
fall off a tree.
Fall off a tree anymore.
All
the boys spent almost every year up until fifth form up the trees or in the long grass smoking weed.
I used to spend a lot of my childhood in the trees.
Yes.
From the bullies, of course. So, tree climbing was really, when I could do it, was really cool.
So what's next? So then after that, lots of things happened to me. I dropped out of school, lived in share houses in lots and lots of drugs. I was in love with a straight woman who moved out into a squat to get away from her, pretty much. And so I started handing out that leaflet, Peace Through Anarchy, which I just I made heaps of them and just handed them out to people in the street.
Were they hand-drawn?
Yes. They were all hand-drawn. And sort of plagiarised from various Anarchist writers and probably Ursula Le Guin as well. just making it up. Very good.
And that's a picture of you, is it? Like,
and that's me
with
being
some...
harassed by the local member. We were being kicked out of a house that was compulsorily purchased for the, I think it's the Mulgrave Freeway now, the Southeastern Arterial it was called at the time. And they just had out in Glen Iris and Darling and all those nice suburbs, just nice houses. They were so nice. Much better than the houses you could rent at the time. Pink marble.
Do people rent? People didn't really rent though, they just squatted, didn't they?
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. We squatted in the path of the freeway because the houses were compulsorily acquired and people kicked out almost like 2-3 years before they were needed. And we were in the middle of housing crisis then, like we are now.
Were you one of the only queer people in those squats?
No, there were other queer people, yeah. I think. There was a phase in the 80s where everyone was a lesbian.
Even the men.
Absolutely, they all had little skirts. Very sweet. Like, if you wore jeans or bondage pants and the arse fell out of them, you'd have to wear a little fanny flap.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Vivian Westwood's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah. And so this is probably not my first comic, but this is, I drew this in the...
How old were you?
Residential Tenancies Tribunal, probably 20, 21, maybe 19, no, anyway. But it's still fairly primitive, and I've done it on the back of an envelope with what was to hand, just maybe some of the road rings that I'd been using to draw my little pictures of trees and libraries. I was an anarchist, feminist, vegetarian atheist, and so I was kind of struggling with the depictions of women. On the left is a poster for Paste Up, and I think it's quite ugly and badly drawn. But it's my effort to be right on. And on the right is something I did in my sketchbook when I lived in London in a lesbian separatist squat.
What's a lesbian separatist squat?
In the sort of place my brother had to ask to be able to come round. And he
because he had to knock on the door.
A dick, so he couldn't come in. Yep. He brought beer. That's your word. I've got beer. Yes, you can come in. But the electrician, we wouldn't let him in.
Mm. Now, as far as influences and what was out there, what you could see at the time, what other queer comics and artists were there that you admired or...
I was pretty isolated in London, so I went to the Tate Modern, and there was an exhibition there of Raw, all of the cartoons from Raw magazine. That was very influential because I just went, oh, okay, that's weird stuff, but comics aren't for kids anymore. You know, this was adult content, this was surrealist and different medium and also cartoony. I also looked at, you can see him up there,
Robert Howard
Cruise, Robert Tripto and gay comics. I think I found them in a comic shop in London. And I just went, now we're getting somewhere. Jennifer Camper, Rude Girls and Dangerous Women there. And Hothead Paisan, Homicidal Lesbian Terrorist by Diane DeMassa. Like, terrible drawings, but you go, well, I could do this. Gives you a great deal of confidence. You go, And the content-wise, it's really filth. And just cutting dicks off and slicing people up. And you just go,
I could do that.
to go, well, I'll pull back from that.
Was it very much influenced by what was happening in, like, New York and... Like, Scum and things like that. Society coming up men and...
I quite like that, but I think I came to that a bit later.
Do you want to give a bit of a context when we talk about things like the Scum Manifesto for people who may not have heard of it at the time?
Yeah.
Valerie Solanas, infamously having shot Andy Warhol, wounding him terribly, and may have had something to do with later on his passing. So she was someone who was at the factory at the time, who filmed factory for Warhol, and didn't feel that she was being treated appropriately, and invaded the headquarters of the factory and shot Andy Warhol. And she said she wanted to. I mean, she kept sending scripts, I think it was, and for a film that was never to be made. She was promised that the film would be made, but it never happened. And she was very out radical feminist lesbian.
But also the thing that she wrote, Scum. Yeah, it's very, very full on.
It's been reprinted just last year, actually, after something like 30 something years.
Well, Scum stands for the Society for Cutting Up Men.
Yeah, it's catchy. It's catchy.
A little bit radical.
And that makes you feel like the things that you come out with not as bad. So that's what I mean. It's good to have a boundary and go, well, I'm not as bad as that. Yes, I am a radical lesbian feminist anarchist, but I'm not that keen on hacking people up.
Yeah.
Calm that down. Oh. That the lesbian news was me attempting to be right on and using 50s comics as well. But this, I'm very ambivalent. As you can see, I sent some of this work to lesbian news as well, and they wrote back to me and said, you know, we're kind of not that into self-harm. And that's not what we're into. And
you're ahead of your time.
Later on, there was a bit more of a movement towards being not just sex positive, but what's the word for it? Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Bondage. Saying bondage was okay and was liberating. I found that a bit confronting. But it was all a go in Sydney. It didn't really happen that much in Melbourne. We were all a bit anti, a bit stuck up and
so
you're conservative. You know?
What about this one?
Oh, see, that was probably it's more ambivalence about sex. It's like you go into a lesbian bar and the place is full of aliens. So that's just what came out of me. It's like sex is dangerous and exciting and interesting, but
were you drawing these while you were in the bar?
No. The first time I went to a women's dance, I was wearing a dress.
Oh.
And everybody there is wearing, oh God, it was the 80s. Everyone looked like George Michael. With their collars up, you know?
Yeah.
You go, that's what lesbians look like, they have their collars up. Okay.
Two-tone. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No, and I was people would ask me to dance, and I said, "You're not to this."
But you've got some more obvious kind of, I guess, it showed for me some more obvious type of political stuff.
Mm.
Not saying that previous stuff wasn't, but
I think it's cliched though. If you look at the it's like that's what they wanted. But any time I did anything for a political organisation, they'd say, "Do a fist smashing through something. Do a fist smashing through the housing crisis. Do a fist smashing through patriarchy. Do a fist smashing through." So there you go, here's a fist.
But that's a fist.
Want a fist? There's your fist. That never made it onto a t-shirt.
It should be on a t-shirt.
But I contrast that with me. I was also studying archaeology. Really enjoying studying archaeology. But that's probably the most erotic work I've done from that time. And it was about birefringence in the...
Please explain. Briefly.
No idea what it means. It just sounds so poetic.
Something to do with volcanic rock.
It's a volcanic glass that people use. Obsidian. It's so sharp. They use it for eye surgery.
Wow. Awesome.
Obsidian.
That's gorgeous.
It's very beautiful, but it turns you into it. That's not me.
That's not you. No.
But
the reason I included that was because this is Sam Warman, and he does a lot of amazing work around the community. And it's the really community-focused work he has. And at the moment, of course, at the top of the list for us here in Melbourne would have to be the housing crisis. And he did this one about a week and a half ago. So I just think it's very similar to that previous one. You know, you've got the ivy. So that boldness, the lettering, that very, very black and white and strong sort of
message. It has to go on a photocopy. That's the main
thing. And it has to go on a photocopy.
The main influence on my work has been the technology. I was quite airy-fairy, but having to bash it onto the photocopier and then put it out there and put on poster.
Which makes sense,
It just changed my work completely.
Can I ask as well, was one of the things with using the rotary that you thought, I can't use too much black because I'll run out of ink?
Yeah.
And
also
gets on
your
hands.
Tiny lines, tiny dots. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't get. I couldn't use a brush for years. I was like, no. I'll pretend to make brush strokes only with a biro. Oh man, that was that previous one of the lesbian bar with that full of aliens. That's all done with biro.
Wow. And here we go. This is you, Joe. Like clearly outside. Buildings, protesting, again, your political work, and Friends of the Earth. These are the little postcards. I remember when I first moved to Melbourne, we used to go and get these little postcards and see the drawings, and then we would pop them or we'd stick stuff. I'm sorry, but
No, that's what they're for. They're for sticking on an envelope and reusing it. Like,
and
you get your water bill, and then you go, oh, no, I'll send that and stick something on top of it.
Do they still do that, Friends of the Earth? I don't know. But it was a big thing, wasn't it? Environment, what was happening with American imperialism, capitalism. I mean, it was all, you know, Reagan and Nancy and Bush. So which Bush
after Reagan, there was Bush. Bush number one. He was Bush elected. One. He was the vice president.
Oh,
and there was
so
all
he
sorts
came
of stuff
out
about
too.
Him being a wimp. Do you remember? And so he went, I'm not a wimp. I'm going to like invade. So he invaded Guatemala. No, Panama.
Panama.
Yeah. Thank you. So when he was here, we thought we'd have an all-purpose protest and say, okay, all of the above. And the pictures is of the exhibition that 10 feminist cartoonists had.
And that's the Friends of the Earth, is it?
Yeah, it's outside Friends of the Earth on and St. George's Road, Brunswick Street.
Wow, okay.
Which is probably beer hall now.
It's a beer hall now.
So are the people in the photograph?
Yeah, the people in the photo are all the ladies who were in the 10 feminist cartoonists in Fogo. Deborah Kelly, Trudy Clutterbuck, Kathleen McCann, Judy Horacek, Nicole McKinnon, Bronwyn Halls, don't know what's happened to her, and me, and Kaz Cook's probably taking the photo because she hadn't been photos. She was quite paranoid. The people would stalk her. And Joan Rosser and Jane Caffarella, who aren't in the picture. Jane Caffarella worked for The Age. And Joan Rosser, I think, was in a car accident, so we never got to meet her.
Quite sad. So here we go. Look, this is your foray into pop culture.
Into pop culture.
A different version of Wilma and Olive Oil. I've never seen those two.
I made that for myself, really. I didn't think anybody else would
understand it. It's kind of fanfic. Today that would be fanfic or slash.
I wrote heaps of slash and fanfic, but there wasn't a word for it then.
Now
I didn't know other people did it. That's another thing that the internet's done. You can meet other weirdos.
I know, so many wonderful weirdos online. Some good, some not so good. But you did these cards, what are these, tarot?
I printed them, they were in two colours.
Catholic cards.
Printed them in 1989.
Cool.
And then still had boxes and boxes of them under my bed for years. The whole, you go into a shop and you say, I've got these cards, do you want some? And they go, oh, yeah.
And paid work, we've got
we'll
some.
We'll have five.
Is that Lino?
Yeah, that's Lino Cut.
Lino Cut.
So that was a protest about Fairly Women's Prison when it was still in that bend of the Yarra, just next to the freeway. It's really, really close by now. It's out in Auckland, and so it's in Deer Park.
I'm slipping in all the time.
I'm Sam Woman.
just some of the similar sort of things, I guess, the political things with Tony Abbott and
I thought they gave them too much power. Basically, what we're talking about is the institutions. As an anarchist, I'm just going, if you focus on the politicians and say, look, aren't they ridiculous, then you're not focusing on how they got to be there or how we can take back our power from them. You know what I mean? It makes them too big. They're just dudes. There's GLAD, Gay Men and Lesbians Against Discrimination. There was a booklet about quite a big thing about instances of harassment and abuse that, statistics were gathered. Because GLAD was a lobby group, and they wanted it illustrated. There was a bit of argy-bargy about me being hired to do this because the dudes wanted sexier cartoons.
Would you be paid for this sort of work?
That was paid work, yes.
Paid work? Okay.
And Brother Sister was paid work as well.
Cool.
Now, the marine boy up the top there was from a real thing. In the 90s, there was a bit more sex positive, and so ladies were encouraged to take over the men's saunas.
Oh.
And basically, the only time I did it, I networked. Naked networking. Hopeless. Lesbians are terrible at casual sex, anonymous, no one's work.
No, they did the same. I was in Adelaide at the time. They did the same thing for the sex on premises venue there. And I asked a dyke mate of mine who'd so been looking forward to it. And I said, and? She said it was full of networking. And I left when they threw a blow up dolphin in the pool.
It's true. We can't do it.
Tell us about these ones.
Now, there was a person who I worked for in Sydney called Jackie Ruddock, and she did Streetwise. That was probably my only comic art paid work. They had a mandate to make comics for young people about issues, about particular issues. They'd workshop the issue, and then I'd draw the comic and I'd take it to young people and say whether they could read it or not. Some of this was very excoriating to young people, and they go, I don't understand what they mean. What's the wiggly line around that? Yeah, it was really wow. So then I'd go back and change it all. But she was also very Sydney lesbian. She was very brightly dressed and very full of energy. So nice. But she's like, what I really want to do is make lesbian porn, and you are going to draw some for me. And I said, back to Velma.
Oh,
thank you. And so these are two pictures she commissioned for me and then bought. I still think they're ambivalent, but they do have nice boobs. Quite good. But the faces, they look very old to me, those girls. It's not unambiguously sexy. You know what I mean? And so then she also got me to do some work for the Family Plan in New South Wales. A project about, I'm missing one, and you lost one of my twats.
I lost one of your vaginas.
Sister, oh my God. This was about how there are some alarming statistics about cosmetic labiaplasty in young women who look at porn and see pretty much just a hole and go, oh my God, I must be some kind of squid creature.
My labia doesn't look like that.
Oh my God. Yes. So I looked at a lot of twats for this project. Oh my God. But also I've collated them, so they're not any one person, because that would be portraiture.
Yeah. One size clearly does not fit all.
And so then on the left is a drawing I did in the 90s. It's quite sort of, not sure about that. And the one on the right is still attempts to do work that is a sex positive. I'm not feeling it. I think it's very stilted and unerotic. It's kind of like being shouted at. You know, poke this in there and there you go, that's your sex. But see, this work is popular, but not with lesbians. So, and if male viewers like the work, I'd go, well, I should really stop doing it. That's enough of that. And this is from an interactive comic I did that's almost all grim. It was like all the storylines ended in death. And then you went over that way, no, and then death. And then, so I added a bit to it that wasn't about death, which was about my first, and it turns out, last long-term lesbian relationship, which, you know, we had a lot of pics on.
What's with the empty bubbles? Is this a silent comic, or...?
Yeah, it is kind of silent, but you can imagine what they're talking. Like, it's... Mm. I want you to put the things they're talking about in there.
Mm.
And going, blah, 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 blah. And so that's the sort of work people like me to do.
This is so stunning.
But it's kind of the mechanical reproduction of photographs. It's, you know what I mean? It's like...
You've got a lesbian couple, right?
Two ladies.
Yes. Pre-rhino on trams.
No, that's Zagu. Anyway, now it's your turn.
Mr. Penley.
Tell us about your
Fenton Penley.
All right. And do you mind if we don't click until I say click?
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
A bit click.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a bit clicky, yeah.
We've got plenty of time.
So one of the things we thought we'd do is we'd talk about bits of our work and we put it in the context of the times that we came from, like in the olden days. And particularly because what we're trying to do is capture, I think, our lives. We only met last week, by the way. But Jo used to do the cover for Chain Reaction magazine while I was doing a cartoon strip inside it. So we must have, you know, passed all the way. You know what Melbourne's like.
What was the strip called?
Hello Flower. Was about a woman whose best mate transmogrified into a flower. Nice and fishy. Good for the audience.
It was really funny too.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the thing I'm not able to do all the time, the funniness.
Wow. As a gay man, queer man, two of the big challenges are, we know lots of funny people, so there's lots of people that you know who are a lot funnier than you are, and you think, crap, I don't know cartoons. But we also, to borrow a phrase from Ro Allen, who's currently the Gender and Sex Diversity Commissioner here in Victoria, she talks about ours as the highly offendable community. So as cartoonists, that's a bonus. Yes. You're going to upset people all the time. But a key bit is, we need to see us. Like, I've got very strong views that cartoons are a way that you
you get to see yourselves, and we don't usually, because if you pick up crap cartoonists, Mark Knight, anyway, a number of other people, that you see representations, because cartoons kind of reduce things as well. So they reduce things in a really mainstream, horrid way. Mm-hmm. Shall we click? So there you go. I was young once. That's what you right? So, and the funny bit is, I couldn't smile back then. It all went into the cartoons. I had a boss once who had been the layout artist on Outrage magazine when I was a cartoonist. 20 years later, he became my boss. And he said, you know, the first time I met you, I thought, you're the saddest person I've ever met. But the key thing for me was that at the time I met people who thought that I was 50, which is because I was drawing for magazines that were very youth focused, and so I made sure that my characters were fat, old, young. There might be glamour people on the cover, but I could be have a little bit of insurrection inside by drawing people as that I actually saw them a little bit. So that was sort of the front cover of the magazine. And if we click again, this was my first ever published cartoon.
Awesome.
Okay, so there you go, back in 1994. The hairs have changed, but the attitude hasn't.
Not
bad. You live in Brunswick.
Yeah, so I was living in South Australia and cartooning for Melbourne. And one of the joys of that is with National Magazine. So you get people in South Australia come up to you and say, what makes you think you're so good if you get published, huh? Thank you. You know you're not funny. Thank you.
Outrage, tell us more about Outrage.
So Outrage started off as a magazine put together by Bluestone Media, which was originally gay men and lesbians. Mm-hmm. Fran Kelly, who some of you might know from morning radio, was the head of the Dyke contingent there, and about issue 8 or something, they decided they couldn't actually stay afloat unless they started advertising pornography, and the women's have a problem with that. So there was a bit of a walk out of the door, and it became so noisy that I managed to nudge one or two lesbian characters back in there, but it took a little bit. And if we click again, we just... some of them, you can see the style really plain and simple back then as well. She's what before she, and if we click again, it was also about trying to be sex positive, because sex, well, you only saw it like in porno, or you hear about it, or in the venue, but to actually cartoon, have humour about sex, godfather.
Be funny about sex. That was one of the best things about Howard Cruise's work as well.
Yes,
he was funny
fantastic.
About sex.
Yeah. Stuck Rubber Baby is just a classic if you've never read it. And it was also that, you know, gay people were not that different to straight people. At the time, I was living in share households, which were predominantly heterosexual, who were what we would now call polyamorous. And I'd go out in the queer scene, and the gay men were all like, I just want to meet Mr. Right. So, okay. A disco is what they used to call nightclubs, but that's about the only thing that's changed.
Yes.
Yeah, click again.
Awesome.
And I was also amused by the fact that gay men came in so many different shapes and sizes, and you'd only see twinks on the covers of things. Yeah.
Did you get any pushback from anybody about how you're putting us all in disrepute? What if straight people see this and then they'll think we're all sex mad nymphomaniacs?
Oh, I thought you were going to say no. I thought you were talking about every single lover of mine. Because I did one cartoon I almost put in, which was a partner saying, everyone will know that's me.
Oh, my girlfriend used to say, why do you always draw me so fat? And you so skinny.
Well, you
draw yourself how you like.
Okay, so that was an ex-partner.
Awesome.
Part of the challenges as well, if we think about the time, is that the magazines were published 3 months after you'd sent the cartoons in. So you do the cartoons, I'd draw about 14, send them through 2 different editors who didn't share a sense of humour, they'd pick 2 cartoons out of the bunch, so goodness knows what happened to the rest. And
how many would you send to them?
About 14 every month. And then 3 months later, you'd see what got used. We click again.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea.
That's one of... I put that in because I just thought It's, you know,
it's squished.
But squished. And
this has
about
to be warmer, isn't it?
Guides to the Yarra rhythms, I guess. Beats, sexuality.
Fabulous. The sex culture for gay men around the country at the time, if we click back to the Beats a moment, was really quite different. So in Sydney, very sex, very in your face, very I can meet someone, have sex with them, I may not see them again, that's fabulous. Melbourne is a bigger version of Adelaide, not a smaller version of Sydney in the way that that works. So in Melbourne you still had Beats, but you also had people who'd be quite open about going to sex on premises venues. Whereas in Adelaide, there's a bit of shame about going to sex on premises venues. Lots of people used the Beats, but all pretended they didn't. And lots of people would go from Adelaide to Sydney for sex.
Oh,
but they bypass Melbourne for some reason. I think because you had to wear nicer clothes here. So, in Sydney, you can wear crap.
Well, I'll have sex with you, but not in
my just
clothes.
Wear more clothes.
More clothes.
More clothes.
Okay. Yeah. So we click. So it was also a bit of fun. And trying to actually, it was just fun to be able to draw. And someone asked, was it you the other day, how did you get into cartoon? I didn't know I couldn't. So back then there was Richard Ortley from New York. There was a San Francisco cartoonist. And we had a gay national magazine. I thought it would be good to do cartoons.
Well,
Sydney's
cartoons,
yeah.
Why not me?
Okay.
Awesome. Nobody said to you, you can't do that. You only had lovers who said, don't draw me.
People told me after I was published that I shouldn't be going there. But, you know, and then we click again. It was also trying to get the queer community to be a bit more honest about itself because I love them dearly and they were a bunch of stuck up, you know.
That's what comes across in all of the cartoons. They're so honest. And I'm sure people go, here, don't say that about us.
But a really important thing that I discovered was I couldn't look down my nose. Like, to begin with, I was a person who's out at the venues and people would come up to you and say, why don't you smile? That's going to make it happen. But I realised I couldn't judge the community. When I did cartoons that judged people, they didn't work. So it had to have an affection for the subject matter. And that was the only time at which I can remember drawing a famous drag queen back in the day, and I had a little gay boy next to her saying, when I grow up, I want to be a woman like you. And the drag queen had it framed and stuck up on the wall. I thought, oh, good, because I used to think she was the most misogynist, racist, you know, but on the other hand, part of our community. This is like a real mix-up. You can see the mother of the lesbian on the left.
I'm enjoying how you take the piss out of lesbians as well. That's really good.
There was a South Australian magazine, which was Galah, and Adelaide GT and everything, and they had nothing on lesbians. So I used to do lesbian cartoons. In my real life at the time, I was helping out with a program called Befriend for newly identifying gay and lesbian people and their parents as a kind of buddy system. So we click again, see I started to try and put more dykes into the pictures as well.
That's what made me go, you know us, don't you? You know Saturn Return.
Sometimes sharp and sit down at the table and listen to it. And I lived in the kind of households where all men are bastards, not you, Kenton. Emergency house meetings when I brought home takeaway chicken and egg on the swing in the backyard once. Destroyed the vegetarian atmosphere. And I was intrigued as well. Oh, yeah, here we go. So it was like trying to do different versions of us at the time too. I was doing lots of work in challenging homophobia, and I ran sessions with a good mate of mine called Mark Marty, and we used to mix up the sessions where she'd talk about men having sex at Beats and I talk about women's pink bits, just because it would make the audience go, they're being sex positive in the wrong way. Let's decide the boundaries of their reality. Yeah,
that's fascinating. That would have really shaken up.
Speaking of shaken up, one more just for the road with it. Because in a town like Adelaide, you get a bit of crossover in the venues, a bit of mixed, and I used to think, oh, my poor legs, they come out here. And members, I don't know why they just don't come. Bear in mind, we're now lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer and questioning. Back in the day, you struggled to get gay and lesbian. Like, why do you say lesbian as well? Why can't we all just be gay?
Why can't we all just be gay? That's what that booklet said. That it was young, gay, and proud, and so that was the first word that I used. for myself.
Talk about yourself as a gay woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we'd say, and bisexual. Oh, yeah, because those extra syllables are so much to say.
And bisexual's a scum, really. Yeah. Unfortunately, I am bisexual, and so I don't usually say it because then people go, well, fancy that, basically.
Yeah. I've got good mates who run the Bisexual Alliance here in Victoria, and the last 2 years are the first 2 years at Pride March they have not been booed. And we're talking home crowd here, folks. So there's a lot of oppression within our community and a lot of misunderstanding, particularly towards our trans and gender diverse folk as well.
Actually, last year was the first asexual march too.
Now, why did they bother coming?
What? They were going to pick up.
They knew they wouldn't. Okay.
But I guess that brings us to the headlines, of course, what happened.
So the very first issue that I had a cartoon published happened to be the very first issue that the HTLV-3 virus was identified as HIV. So I'm that old. I'm that old that if we click again, I helped supervise the phone line for when the Grim Reaper campaign happened here on television. So what happened as a cartoonist is there was a need for us to see ourselves and to laugh in the face of death. Lost a lot of friends. I was in my 20s and I stopped counting at about my 40th funeral of lovers and friends who died at the time, and it was pure luck that I didn't get HIV myself, and I'm really lucky that I've still got long-term mates from that time who are HIV positive, who've been able to stick through it all through thick and thin. So I developed what we call a survivor's sense of humour. Really sick and twisted. All right. So we click again.
That's warm.
Yes. I had to throw that in there because I thought what you'll be talking about is
being sex-positive.
Yeah, some
in the face of death.
In the face of death, and some of the attitudes outside of the immediate community.
Yeah.
And some of the feelings people had themselves during that era was a feeling. Unloved and unwanted within our own community as well as from the outside.
Are you talking about not picking up on a Saturday night?
So, yeah, that's another Sam Warman, and I think he does this for a magazine called Dirty Queer, which is based in Sydney. So, back to you.
That was my first official couple of graphics I did. These were the front cover of a report that was Australia's first report to the first AIDS conference in Washington. And Janet taking the shower with your raincoat on is one of the things that people used to say about condom use at the time. We click again and click again. I used to do some safe sex positive, try and normalise people. We click again, I think another one comes up. There we go. So it's like you can see very 80s fashion. Right. Everything was pastel back then. It was terrible. That was a real oppression. So just trying to upsell, and I worked in the field for 15 years as a safe sex educator, and I have to tell you, I used to say to people, selling safe sex when real sex is your alternative is like doing home brand cola when Coca-Cola is your competition. So it's a little bit of a, and you'll enjoy it too.
No frills packaging.
Yeah. And lesbians and bloody those. Have you ever tried to suffocate
yourself?
I'm afraid
it's very like eating pizza with rubber on top of it.
It's that no frills cheese.
It's no frills cheese. It's not yet. We gave up on that quite early. I did do some work for Vivates about wearing rubber, wearing gloves, using dental dam, and I haven't included any of that because it's just very unconvincing.
Fetish?
Well, it was a good time for rubber fish.
This is where it comes from, perhaps.
Okay, so that's how long ago it actually was, okay? So back then, condoms were not something that gay people used. I can remember giving out condoms 1 year at the Royal Show because you weren't sure, like, you give them to injecting drug users. I used to deliver condoms to brothels. No one was actually sure where the virus was going to break out. What they were most worried about was a crossover to the normal people. So they funded lots of things where, you know, those poor straight people having sex with prostitutes.
Yes.
We want to make sure it doesn't happen. given about this group of snottigled private schoolboys came past and said, "Do you wear these to keep the shit off your dick?" And I thought, "Oh, that's a sensible idea."
Needles for the same reason, because I was an injecting drug user, but everybody thought, well, I'm not a junkie, so they would be, especially speed freaks, they would use the one needle for four people, and I was like, well, you're all going to die if you do that. Here, have a clean one, or snort it, for God's sake. You deals.
Strong drug using language.
Even kissing was there was so much fear in that. If you were pansexual, there was all this other.
We used to say that back
stuff.
In the day, more people died from AFRAIDS, anxiety and fear related to AIDS, than died of AIDS in the early days. Mm-hmm. Could hear my instructor educator voice coming through. And I used to teach people how to clean their needles with bleach, so that if you had to reuse it. So then I started to go, okay, the editor said, don't make any cartoons with AIDS in, it's not funny. So. We're sat to cartoons with AIDS. It was one, and if we click again, between you and I, it's great to be able to say I've only got herpes. It's like, people laughed, all right? We're in the middle of our friends dying, so we needed to laugh. If we click again, and click again. Ah, it's easy to get rid of him. I just said yes in an American accent. That makes no sense now, but back then we were told, HIV, you're probably going to get it if you sleep with an American person or a drug user or someone...
Someone foreign.
And there was a joke at the time. There were terrible jokes against us. In our community, it's like, what's the hardest thing about discovering you've got AIDS? Trying to convince your parents you're Haitian. Okay? There we go. Humour. Because it was easier than telling them you were gay. Okay. The future. Now, there's a word that used to mean something. Mm. People laughed at this fucking shit. How depressing is it now? Okay. Okay. And so, then I could upsell with a little bit of positivism. Because we were made to feel dirty and yucky and dying, and mates looked a bit skeletal, and you knew that. You know, I can remember the embarrassment of bumping into someone. Sometimes when you say things first before you think, oh my God, I heard you were dead.
That's brilliant. You're looking good for
if you thought dead, and if you hadn't seen someone for a while, there was that rumour.
Well, one of my lovers, I'd heard he died three times. And I kept bumping into him. He was a sex industry worker, and it was, okay, you are still...
There was lots of stigma, and I remember living in New Zealand, it was like, I used to have friends fly to Sydney to have sex, you know, because clearly I wouldn't get any in New Zealand. Lights out after 6 p.m. over there. But we would be like, don't go to Sydney, it's full of AIDS. You know, it was terrible. But that's the way we used to talk.
Yeah.
Horrible.
So click again, and it was... and if we click again... So you can see that being an AIDS educator, it was leaking over into the cartoon work as well. These were in the mainstream gay magazine, and here's another benefit, is we'd struggle to get our work. Yet cartoonists, you know you've made it when people say, oh, I've got you stuck behind my toilet door, or you're up on our fridge.
On the fridge.
There we go.
Made it.
Friona
Katakis calls it the fridge accolade.
The fridge accolade, that's fantastic.
Oh,
isn't it?
Cut your cartoon out, stuck it on the fridge.
And when
nothing
you go
like
there and you're yellow, you're pale,
Did you have the dispensers in the toilet? I lived in a house where we had little jars with condoms and for our guests to come and use.
And this one goes, yes or no, it's yes, it's safe sex or no sex. And if it's safe sex, I'm not into condoms. And if that's still okay, I've got some pamphlets on me I'd like to go through with you. And that was the joy of safe sex as well. You didn't just sign up once. Every single freaking time you went to Stub somebody, there was a negotiation right from the beginning.
Was that from Adelaide, Stub?
A little bit of humpy-pumpy, a little bit of fun. Back at the time as well, because we're both big Alison Bechdel fans, Dykes to Watch Out For was like, like the piece de resistance for us. Yeah. I was lucky for 5 years I got to do a cartoon strip called Bent to the Knees. The joy of that is you get to be really famous and no one knows you, so it's a win-win. For me, one of the peak moments was I was in a crowded bar in Sydney and someone said, I'll give you this seat if you tell me what happens to Douglas in the next episode. I made it.
And so it's kind of, like Dykes watched out for, it was kind of a soap of everybody's lives.
And I managed to sneak in there lots of stuff about our lives. So I had a household. If we click again, there's just some random things there. You can see the kind of, when you do a strip like that, you do lots of work that no one gets to see because you do it for yourself with a strip that's that big on the inside back cover of the magazine. We click one more time. And again, and again. And then just leave that there for the moment. So Douglas up there in the top corner, that aerial political, that's very much how I fucking felt. Poor Jonathan. I used to be involved in Campaign Against Nuclear Energy, Philippine Action Support Group, Prisoners Action Group, none of which was like mainstream gay at the time. But actually you can see the boys having sex. My third episode got banned because I had an erect penis. The two boys there who had sex, I actually had Casper on the left, his penis woke up and had a conversation with Jonathan in the middle of the night and told him that Casper was going off and cheating with other people. And in the last frame, Jonathan grabbed it and says, but why are you telling me this? And the penis says, oh, inside your mouth is the nicest place in the world for me, you know? It got banned for two reasons.
Yes!
One is, you can't show a penis that's more than 45 degrees erect. So I figured there's some of the government office going.
There's
rules everywhere. And the other is, because he grabbed the penis to speak to it, that was like counted as queer contact. So 3 months' notice, I had to redraw all over again and do a different thing.
You did very well.
Thank you.
You did very well.
And if we click again, the other thing that I was told, don't do HIV/AIDS, I took the most popular, nicest person in the strip and I made him HIV positive. I had already drawn him based on a friend of mine who I didn't know at the time was positive, and he died about a month after the strip started, so that had a little bit of extra meaning in there for me. And I also made sure that his character would never get sick and never die in the strip. Instead, I killed off one of the other characters. Hot tip, if you're going to kill off a character, the ex-lover you based on gets really angry. You killed me.
Oh my god. Did they look like them, or they were based on their... I'm working on a graphic novel at the moment where I've fictionalised what everybody looks like.
I have a character called Munchkin, and I had the chubby character in there. Douglas was in a relationship with Munchkin at the same time he was in a relationship with Relationship Man. Relationship Man, I'm thinking of revisiting and calling it Intersectionality Person. That would just work these days. And I had Munchkin run down by a truck just so I could do cartoons about what it was to do the grief and loss thing. So over three episodes I had, and I had the editor write me back, this is supposed to be a cartoon strip and you made me fucking cry. So we click again. That was the last bit, which was Munchkin's funeral. And back in the day, one of the things that happened is lots of our funerals got taken over by the family, and I saw far too many people who would talk about their lovely child up until the age of 21 when they'd absconded into this other life. And don't get me started, because there's a lot of anger there still. So I had my characters sort of take it over, and Right on Time was a big song at the time, and I had them take over the funeral and have that little bit of grief and fun. Like
I think thinking of a film at that time, probably My Own Private Idaho, does show that a bit in metaphor, Gus Van Sant, where they have two different funerals, the homeless guy has the funeral separate and the family are having...
Which is more like a riot and a stomp.
Riot and a stomp, but there's lots of queer subtext in that film.
I've got a gay uncle. We just click back one, sorry. I've got a gay uncle who's been with his partner now for 38 years. So one of the bits I'm lucky with is when I hear people say, gay relationships don't last. I'm like, right. But his generation were the ones hardest hit at the time with the deaths and the funerals he was talking about. Because back in the day, the coffins would go behind a curtain. The first one he told me about, the friend went behind a curtain. There was a pause. A little gloved hand came out. I went like that, and I thought, can. So then in 96, 97, I was doing cartoons for a paper called Capital Q, which is the one that I was trying to remember that's not Sydney Star Observer. And the huge radical thing is the fax machine. So I could actually draw a cartoon and fax it, right? And then they'd shrink it down. But it meant that I could do a cartoon the day before. So if there had been a story come out, I could actually, like these days, I can take a fucking picture on my phone and zap it through. But back then, so there was this, there's just a couple more. That one there, which was the, after a particular Mardi Gras, they used to have a recovery party and it was off on an island in Fiji, which is one of the most homophobic fucking places you go anyway. We click one more time. Okay. So since then, more recently, I've been doing stuff online. So there's some guided YouTubes done based on the interviews that Daniel Whithouse did with his Beyond That So Gay, Challenging Homophobia work. The top right-hand corner there is KCRA and Metro West. All the councils got together doing queer consultations. So I walked around with a giant board and drew people and gave the community back to itself, which is still what we were always trying to do, I think. I think that's almost it for me. If we click again. Ah, a little bit of segue. Mm. Yeah. I wanted to talk about how we get seen. So here's some of our best pals, Wilcox, Golding, David Pope, who's now in the Canberra Times, who for years cartooned under the name of Heinrich Heinz. Mm. But you can see that the LGBTI stuff pops up during... I was going to say weddings, parties, anything, but weddings, gay marriage is the big issue, and then following on from that, if we click again, safe schools, then we can see Wilcox, and we can see David Pope again up there too. And if we click one more time, we can also see David Pope and Pat there doing the safe schools thing. Now, don't click yet. What we are seeing here... people that we know and love and get on well with, for whom queer people have always been part of their lives, who've got sensitivities to our issues, and they're cartooning for a mainstream audience. So it has to be the issues that make sense to a mainstream audience. Unfortunately, if we click one more time, you get to see expletive deleted crap like this. So this piece of doggy do, which is manages to be offensive on every single level because it combines the misunderstanding about, you know, Bruce Jenner's name is the one that's up there. The other fabulous bit here, of course, is remember what I said about cartoons being a reductionist language? Joan Kerner never wore polka dot frock. It was the cartoonists who put that on her as a shorthand language because they want to say, this is Joan Kerner, if I can't draw her properly, you'll know it's her because of the spotted frock. Okay? That's how lame cartoonists can be.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because we need to get it across like that. So this piece of crap manages to be, show the Herald Sun for what its politics are. Yeah?
Mark and I actually, I've met him, and he didn't seem when I met him to be an a-hole. I think it's working. That's made his politics kind of squish down to. Maybe he handed in 12 cartoons a day, and they picked the worst one.
Well, that's the most conservative.
Yeah, that's the one that won't offend 12-year-old reading age league readers.
Misogynist patriarchal little okay. All right, so that's it from me.
You wanted to show us some
I just want to show some more of Sam, because he couldn't...
Absent friends.
He couldn't be here. He's in New Zealand, of course. Well, I don't know what he's doing there. But I think he follows through that tradition of the elders. And
he's...
No, now he's contemporary. He's a contemporary. And, I mean, this is, I love this one too, because it touches on many things over the last many decades too, like what you were saying earlier, is where queer culture sort of has to hide or is seen subtext of things and code and
some things have changed and some things haven't.
It's a bit like Underworld, you know. You can come out at night or be seen at night, but you can't come out during the day. And he's very similar, straight to the cuts to the chase as well, I think.
He also holds our community to account in a really good way. So he holds it up and says we're not all white, middle class, cisgender, privileged, written, etc. So
they did an acronym for that. And this was something at the substation last year, if anyone went to that, over in Footscray Arts, put on this wonderful bunch of queer cartoonists and comic artists at the substation called Sissy Boulevard. That's my idea of cropping a photo. The building doesn't look like that, so it is completely safe to walk into. It's fabulous. And he's done stuff on social media.
Grinder one. Everybody's seen it, because he's sort of pulled apart a grinder thing and sort of had who these people are, how they responded to him in this second one. And it was stuck on the wall with lots of little cartoons stuck around it. It was quite small, but you sort of got the image.
It's really good.
Like a comic, but it's sort of more interactive, so it was really good. I really enjoyed that. It was quite a small space they exhibited in.
Very small.
Very intimate.
Giant building, old substation, and tiny room.
Old machinery.
But they got the outside done, so it was like five artists, and they managed to do billboards, which were fantastic, really awesome.
You can see them on the train.
That was really
cool. Thing.
I used to take the train just to catch a glimpse. Because I missed that one, so I have to take the train and go back and, I caught that bit. So Metro owes me. Sexuality, it's something you can't contain, you know. You can't stick it in a box. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the same here. And of course, more recently, to do with, I guess, Anzac Day, and this came out just about a week and a half ago, what some people are saying. And within the queer community too, what I find interesting about Warm and Sam is it's not always appreciated as such openly, and there's those difficulties arise with white privilege and so on. Racism. And I think
who said, what pushback are you getting?
Well, there was a certain demonstration, it was at March, Pride March, Queers Revolt, and he was a supporter of that. So there was some stuff went down on social media that, sort of blew the lid off a bit. It's pretty much about, it's becoming a little bit divisive and divided about, I guess, what queer culture, what we should be doing, what we should be representing. Are we going to be pro-same-sex marriage, or is it same-sex equality, or is it, what about the homeless, queer homeless, When you read the, out of 75% of homeless people are identify as queer, and 25% of those are under the age of 25, I think it is. That's a real concern, and our community may not be addressing that, and that's what Sam likes to talk about. I guess putting yourself in someone else's shoes. There you go. I couldn't resist that one.
We do actually.
That's
in terms of social, Sam and I like to draw together. So
I think that might be it. That's Queer Geeks of Oz. Is what I do. That's Dean Rankin. He's a great advocate, and that's our queer kangaroo game-playing nerd. And of course that's Uluru, which I've never been to, sorry. Go. And you can tune into Sci-Fi and Scream, here's the plug. Sci-Fi and Scream, Community Radio, Queer Geeks of Oz, that's Dylan, that's not me, but obviously, on Joy 94.9. Cool. Hashtag Free the Arts. That was our meeting that we had last week. Well, you two finally met. And ignored me and started drawing.
That's what we do. So
just do the camera work.
That's the end, but I think it's just the start. If anyone has any questions or anything, please, too.
For sure.
That'd be great.
Where else, is there any kind of like network or any kind of website or listing or anything where we can find more Australian queer comics? Because I'm always trying to find other queer comic artists in Australia. It's very hard.
It's hit or miss pretty much. Zine culture, however, does seem to specifically be drawing a lot more comics and artists and creatives and poets as well. But it is zine, and some people don't like to mix the two and as such. But I know I went to the Festival of the Photocopy. I don't know if anyone else was there. But there was a few tables. I've never seen so many queer tables before. But it's just that we're all finding each other. So there's Concrete Queers. There's Quartz.
Which will have
a table tomorrow, which is great.
Here's a Hyena have there.
And Here's a Hyena's is a great bookstore, but also it's a great venue for communities. So they have Monday evenings and last Monday of every month. They have the LGBTIQ comic book group. I know that's a mouthful. I think I got it around the right way.
Are they readers or makers?
Mix.
They're readers.
They're fans.
And possibly they'd be reading things from overseas.
But they're trying to... Again, they're like we all are, trying to find more of the local content and inviting our local comic artists and published artists when there are published artists.
I haven't found any audience for anything.
They have done Alison Bechdel. They recently did Fun Home. Is it Fun Home?
Yep. She was here and talked, and I didn't realise there were so many lesbians in Melbourne who were interested in comics.
Well,
fill the room. I couldn't believe it.
My theory is if Alison Bechdel can write something for Lucy Lawless, it'll be packed, swamped. But yeah, it's very much hit and miss, but getting there. And for my show, I try to, you know, keep the doors or the airwaves open for that. There's also the... you did the comic spot for a while.
I did, with Bernard.
And now there's one on Triple R.
No, 3CR policy was, yeah. I just imagined old Marxists listening to us in their kitchen going, what's that about comics?
One of the other things, though, is that I know a lot of, like, artists who are a bit ashamed about their cartooning side. Love Deborah Kelly and her art pieces.
Yeah.
And so I've just done that. Well, that's a great cartoon. Don't tell anybody I did the cartoon.
She graduated from being a cartoonist to being a multimedia performance artist, didn't she?
Fantastic.
She does proper art.
Yeah, proper art. Which is magnificent.
But of the 10 women cartoonists who were in that 91 show, only two of us are still making cartoons.
Well, there's something. Cats.
There's three of us, okay.
Three.
Well,
yeah.
See, I'm not a gay cartoonist. Comic artists, so they're the only two who are still making gags. Don't know what's happened to Bronwyn Balls, and Deborah's making proper art,
Any other questions?
Yeah,
Stephen.
Seems like the 80s and the 90s, particularly, were really rich with all of the magazines with queer comics. It doesn't seem to me that that's carried through as much as perhaps the internet could have. Continued that. What's your idea of whether that richness has been able to continue or not?
I think a lot of it has become very dispersed, and it's almost like it's a diaspora, and it's almost like we need to say, hey, let's all get back to one defining thing, because there's Lifted Brow, which is an online digital magazine, and the people that run that are queer, and there's a lot of you know that one.
It's so weird. I didn't know that they had any kind of sexuality. I have no idea.
Yeah, I guess it's just work. At the end of the day, it's jobs. Trying to get work to be integrated. Are we integrating? Is that what we should be doing?
There's just less, fewer mags.
And there's fewer mags.
And also, it's cheaper to publish and print things. So people will print in colour. So they don't need an artist to do anything in black and white. All the jobs that I had for illustrating AGM magazine, here's our report, it needs jazzing up.
Mm.
All of that work is gone because they'll use a photo because it's easier to print a photo. And they'll go, what we want is somebody at their desk and they're crossing their legs and they're like this. And so, Mary Evans Picture Library, there it is, stick it on. And so magazines are the same thing. They'll use a photo. It's easy to use a photo.
The only variation on that is when I was cartooning, there was also a strip out of Sydney called Living with Adam
that was done by Jeff Allen. And Jeff Allen is now the graphic designer for the Australian Financial Review. And his strip was magnificent, although he says he was smashed for most of it. That kind of comes through. And I remember walking into a hotel in Sydney once and was like, do you know that this is Kent and the cartoonist? And the guy's like, oh, I love your work, and I'll be living with Adam all the time. I think, it's fine. Yeah. One of the cartoonists in the country.
There's only one queer cartoonist. That's all right.
But I think that in some ways the internet has given us more access to stuff more easily. It's knocked down the boundaries for what's there overseas. Mm. It's also brought more to the fore the alternative point of view. But in terms of the print media, Bluestone Media sold out to Satellite, and Satellite crashed really badly. Mm. So there were several magazines.
They misnamed themselves, probably.
Yeah, Satellite's crashed, didn't they?
And it was pretty horrible because there were like years and years worth of graphics that got thrown out when there was a takeover. So it was a bit heartbreaking. I remember being thrilled about 4 years after it happened, someone sent me through an envelope of my cartoons that had survived. Like, survived the Satellite crash. So
you sent originals. You sent originals to magazines.
Yeah.
Originals through the post has never worked for me. They get lost, they get burnt. It's like dog eggs.
It costs so much to get a decent bromide done.
Bromides! Let's talk about bromides.
Back in the day. Anyway.
Couldn't just bank things on the photocopier. They had to be print quality, and they had to be on a machine which made a photograph and then made a printed out a thing that was slightly brown after a few years, and then you use that to print from brown.
But I think the trick now is that if you regularly cartoon on the interwebs, one of the key bits is to make sure you upload the same time every week so that people actually know if I go there Friday morning, I'm going to see that thing. And that's how you build your audience. And I've seen it happen a few times over where people have done that and actually built up their own comic books page by page. And it's led to it being printed in real life, IRL as well.
Or you could get lucky and get employed by something like, I don't know, Marvel or DC or Image Comics.
Marvel is definitely going to hire me to do a lesbian alien.
And do a lesbian alien. Yeah,
that's it.
Cool.
With a really unhappy ending.
That's it.
Oh, that's not good.
Anyone else? I think we'd probably have to wrap.
No, has anybody shone light at it yet?
No,
clicking
the laser light.
At that, yeah.
Clicking off. All right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Well, that's the end of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed and got a lot out of humour and humanity. And it was held at the Home Cooked Comics Festival, 2016, April 30th, from 4:30 p.m. to 5:45. And thank you again to Kenton Penley Miller, Joe Waite and Sam Warman and all the gang at the Home Cooked Comics Festival for their support. Brilliant. And keep listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam and keep following Queer Geeks of Oz on Joy 94.9.
This is Alison Bechdel. I'm a big dyke, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.